Hi, this is Brenda Daly, and this is Real Women Celebrating Women in Independent Film. And I'm here speaking with Danny Tesla. He's an actor, singer, and now a filmmaker. What we want to talk about is why he did it, why he got involved, and what excited him at the prospect of actually becoming a filmmaker. So hello, Danny. How Good. Are you? So you have a new film that you're getting ready to start producing and directing. And it's called The Animal Protector. Now, is this your very first film that you've done that with?
Well, it's the very first film as far as me directing. And I've written some things before. And I wrote a few stage plays and produced them in Australia and in Singapore. So, but this will be the first time I'm directing a feature film. Yeah.
And you wrote this yourself?
I wrote this. I came up with the story and then I was writing the screenplay, but it was taking me forever. So I hired a guy called Ryan Eicher, Las Vegas. And we used to work together in different jobs around town. And he told me that he wrote every day. Like, this is literally how he spends every... He wakes up in the morning and he spends hours writing. So I knew someone that had been writing for 8 years like this every day is going to be good. So I just trusted that and hired him. And the two of us wrote the screenplay. And it was fantastic because I needed that motivation by having someone calling me up and going, hey, what have you done those pages for vice versa? So now that I've gotten into the discipline of being able to write every day, I think I can do it. But he's fantastic when it comes to descriptions of actions and things. Almost like a novel in a way. He's very great with those kind of words. I'm very good with dialogue and story, and so we make a good team.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I always feel like I do better with a team than I do by myself. Like, I do write, but I tend to lean on people. And even if they're not writers, I tend to set, I have a certain set of friends that even though they're not writers, I'll send them something and they'll either tell me yes or no.
Right.
And I know they'll tell me the truth, which is probably the most important
That's
thing
very
to have
important.
In a friend.
Absolutely. Yeah. But
because I need someone to tell me, oh, you need to fix this. And I can't get offended about it. I just have to go and fix it.
Yeah. I mean, it's great when, if someone has an idea of how to fix it or why they don't like something, I like that. Where if someone just outright criticizes something, it's like, well, that's not really very helpful. It's just like, I don't like this or I don't like that. There was a couple of people I sent it to and they were offended by a couple of things that were initially in it. And they weren't realizing it wasn't me. It was the story and it's the characters. If a character says something or does something, it's got nothing to do with me.
Well, I think the teachings that I've done tons and tons of classes on it, but sometimes if you offend people a little bit, then you're on the right track.
That's right. Yeah. No, sometimes, yeah, exactly. You trigger them and it makes them think about things from a different point of view.
They may not like it, but that's okay.
But we did a read-through recently. I just grabbed a bunch of actors that are friends that I respect and have worked with before. And we did a little read-through of the script. Not that they're necessarily going to be the ones in the film. That's all still casting is still coming up. But great to hear everybody bring the characters to life. And at the end, I was asking for feedback and they were all like, no, besides a few spelling errors, it's good. It's good to go. I was like,
okay, but since as a screenwriter, I barely graduated high school, just so everybody knows. I was a terrible student. I was too busy partying. and that's the God honest truth. But I have to tell you, my spelling sucks. My punctuation sucks. My structure is not so good, but I know I tell a good story. So when someone only gets to that part, then I'm like, why did you even say anything? Because I already know.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, that's not going to be on the screen, our punctuation and grammar and spelling. So, what really matters is does the story make sense? You know, that's the kind of question I want to ask. Did you understand everything? Was there anything that was hard to understand or didn't make sense? That was great. Even though they were fine with it, I still went back and made a few changes after that to the script and have been rewriting it.
When you hear it in your head and you're writing it, it's one thing. But when you actually hear it, I've been doing a lot of table reads during lockdown. And so I've had a lot of people say, oh, I didn't see it that way.
Right.
And it's like, oh, well, when I read it, that's how I saw it. And, because the person who's presenting it and then the person who's reading it, they see it two different ways.
Yeah.
So as the person presenting it, you kind of want to have that open, okay, that's how they see it. Maybe it will work better that way. Or maybe it's just the way
absolutely.
I want it
I'm always open to hear everyone's ideas. I have a pretty clear vision of what I want things to be, but it's always great to get everyone's opinion. And then the other thing was, I noticed when I was giving people roles, because obviously there was only six or seven of us doing the reading, and there's about 60 roles in the film. So
60?
Yeah.
60 roles? Oh, my 60, God. Okay.
60 roles, and then there's also extras as well. So all up, there'll probably be about 80 to 100 people on the cast.
All right.
But yeah, there's 60 actual speaking parts. So I noticed when I was handing out the parts, it was predominantly male, and I didn't have enough female roles. I had two females doing the reading, two women doing the reading, and then I was like, I need to. I didn't even notice that the first time round. I was like, oh my goodness, this is like, I'd say 70% of the roles, or even 80% of the roles, were male, and 20% were female. So I've now switched it. Now it's more on the lines of about 55% male, 45% female parts, because. It didn't need to be that many male parts. That's the thing. A lot of the parts, I don't know why, but maybe it's just because I can see that point of view. I'd write a character and I put it down as a guy.
I think, too, that's the difference between the male-female situation is when you're growing up, and you and I are pretty much close to the same age, it's like everything's pretty much been pretty male-dominated. And so when you see your icons and the people that are in front of you, it's usually...
Point. Yeah, I just noticed that that was one of the other things I noticed, is that besides the roles being predominantly male, that they're also mostly older characters as well, and they didn't have any one for the youth to relate to at all. So I was like, well, right. I better. But again, it was very easy. I just managed to change to younger characters. So. A couple of them. The majority are still older characters, but
okay. So let's go back and start from the beginning. Where are you from?
Where am I from? Doing my own one man show in the corporate events, and then I got my green card. I won the green card lottery, so I was like, finally, I can chase my dream and make films in America. So I moved to LA, but realized that the half the battle is not just getting the green card. You don't have any credit when you arrive. So you've got to establish credit, because even just renting a home, they're like, where did you live before? Well, I rented in Singapore for 6 years. That's no good to us. Do you have a job? No, I just arrived. Mm-hmm. What's your credit like? I have no credit. So then you got to also, the union thing is an issue as well. Obviously, coming in, I'd been in the Australian union for over 20 years. And normally that can pass over. They can write a letter to help you join the American Union, but unfortunately, because I've been in Singapore for 6 years, I hadn't bothered to keep up with my Australian Union. What's the point? So when I arrived, I called them up and I said, I need you to write a letter so that I can join SAG. And they said, well, came to LA. I've been living in Singapore for 6 years with my own entertainment company over there doing, from Sydney.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And what brought you to the United States?
To do this, actually. I've been wanting to make movies. I've been involved in live entertainment mostly in Australia. And because Australian film industry is almost non-existent, there's not really nothing there.
The whole theme of the movie is to let people understand that, I don't want to say animals or people too, but I know I have pets. And
yeah.
They pretty much own me. Like, except for the fact that I have to put them on a leash when we go for a walk.
Right.
I probably wouldn't do that if the law didn't require it.
Yeah. I mean, they're like children, like our family, and people that have connected with their own pets can see the value and see that they are unique individuals with feelings and thoughts and just like us, have a life, and that is worthy of our on the same level. So the idea is to, by the end of the film, I would love the overall thought process for people after they've watched the movies to understand that if any of these situations, you replace the animal with a human being, how would you think of this character? Because you know, people are going to, some people will look at the character and say he's a psychopath, he's killing people. And other people will look and say, well, if it was a human, I would say that he's a hero. And then there are some people that are vegans and animal activists that will say that anyway. They'll just go straight for the he's a hero. So I'm hoping to have people come out of this thinking from a point of view of looking at animals as you would any human being in that kind of with that kind of respect of life. Without looking at them and saying it's okay to torture and kill. Remember, and I said, well, let me join up and I'll again, and you can write the letter. And they said, well, you'd have to be in Australia for at least a year, working for a year before we could write you that letter. And I was like, I was a member for over 20 years. And so it's frustrating because then again, everyone looks at me like I'm an amateur rocking up to LA. Because I'm not in the union, and that was frustrating as well. Because not only the pay, but also the opportunities that you get. So
yeah, but the union doesn't give you the opportunities. It's the agencies that you get.
That's right. Yeah, and the agencies are going to look at that as an indicator of whether someone's on a certain level or not. And it's it doesn't matter what shows I did in Australia or anywhere else in the world. They don't really count here. You know, they don't mean a lot. Like if I said I was in Grease the Arena Spectacular in Australia, people would think, oh, he was in a production of Grease, maybe a little local production. Because over here the big things are Broadway or London, the West End. But in Australia, that was the biggest selling show in Australian history. We were doing 20,000 seater arenas and we sold out 5 times around the country. So it's frustrating. That's why I changed my name, because when I came, I thought my name means nothing in America. So I might as well get change my name to something that's unique, because my real name is Daniel Thompson. But there's 1,000 Daniel Thompsons. If you put in Daniel Thompson on Google or YouTube or Facebook, so many will come up. So I thought I'm going to have a unique name that if you put me in, you know, there'll only be a few of us. So I thought, well, who am I going to, what's the last name that would be someone inspiring that I'm inspired by? And I'd just done a recording in LA of a new musical called Tesla, the Electrical Spectacle. I love the concept. And so I went in and did some songs for them. And as they knew I could do different voices and everything, they had me singing a lot of the tracks on the album. So I was hearing about the musical and hearing all about Nikola Tesla. I knew a little bit about him, but I didn't know all this stuff about him, and it was amazing. I was just so blown away by the man. I was like, you know, that's my inspirational name, so I'll take the name.
yeah, plus it's blown up since you've taken it. The whole thing is just getting amazing.
Yeah, I know. That's usually what I get if I walked into a place and someone hears my name, they say, oh, like the car. And I'm like, no, like the genius inventor.
Right. But I think too that I think it's inspiring that you're willing to kind of throw there's nothing wrong with your original name, but I think it's just kind of interesting that you kind of threw a name that I don't even think Tesla cars, when I met you, I don't even think Tesla cars were as big a thing as they are now. So it's
no, they were just starting
that
up.
It kind of blew up. Yeah. And here you got this great name for your acting and professional name. So that's great. That was smart. That was super smart. That's a good tip for any of you actors out there. Try to find somebody who's inventive and you see them doing something big in the future. That's probably a good clue.
Yeah. And also if your name is very common, it might be a good idea to get a stage name, because you want to stand out so that people can find you easily online, where you have a very common name, then it's hard to stand out online.
Well, you know, the key to that, though, is if you do have a common name, is to post enough and get enough people to follow you that you end up being the first person. When somebody Googles your name, you're the pictures that come up. Because I think I do so much posting that somebody said, hey, I typed in your name and they're asking for, I can't remember, they were asking for like not my birth certificate, but my driver's, a picture with me, my driver's license and everything. So now if you punch in Brenda Daly, I'm literally the only person that comes up.
Wow.
Yes. Awesome. And it'll never change because I was the first one to claim it. So you need, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a great tip that somebody gave me. And I was like, well, this is good.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, and I think it's important to be the first one that comes up because then people will contact you. And so, so I wanted to ask you, because let's go back to the movie, is are any animals going to be used to make the film?
No, that's a great question. I've been vegan for many years, so that was important to me, that not only is the catering all going to be vegan, but that we're not going to be using animals. So that took quite a long time to figure out how to write a script called The Animal Protector, which obviously involves animals, but is still able to do it without actually using animals. So there's things like, obviously, we can use some stock footage of some wild animals, some animals at the, there's a scene at the zoo. So we'll be using, again, stock footage of animals at the zoo. When it comes to, there's a couple of things that can be done with CGI. A rabbit is a big part of the initial story. And even some of the toys now look incredibly close to real rabbits. So again, it's just a matter of how it's being shot and how things are suggested. There's one scene where there's a dog in the opening scene is being kicked by its owner. And and there's a way to do that again without doing anything to a real dog without and again the idea of that starting off with the dog is that something everyone can relate to and immediately connect with the character and say, yes, that's wrong. I'm upset about that. And then it sort of keeps going that way where it builds and builds to, the situation that happens a few days later where it's getting a lot more extreme. So the idea was to have the audience come on the ride with him so they could relate and understand and sympathize and connect and empathize with, the situations that he's put in and what he has to face so that, when things go really dark, they're sort of already there with him. Is it okay? And all you have to do is have people connect to the animals like you've connected to your dogs. You would find it horrifying, the thought of anyone killing and eating your dog, the same way as they do in China and different places that they do that kind of thing. And it's like, well, to them, it's just another animal. It's just a pig or a chicken or any other animal. It's all the same. So it's a matter of having that connection. My connection was with a pig years ago, 20 years ago, or actually now over 20 years ago. And that because I've been brought up having pets, dogs, and that the pig was so much like a dog that when I had him on his back rubbing his belly, that it had me look at him in a whole pigs in a whole different light. And I think it's like that with every animal. As soon as you have that connection to the animal, you can't look at it as being something that is here for our use, that we can do whatever we want to. You look at them as an equal living being that deserves respect and to be treated with the same kind of respect that you would treat anybody that was part of your family or friends. It's just both vegan, and then we changed it to his wife wasn't vegan, and then we had to flip it where she was, and then she was doing it behind his back feeding their child meat. So
I could go vegan, but I'm living with a carnivore, so it's a little difficult. But
in this story, it's with the relationship actually has a situation like that, because where that becomes an issue. So it's funny that you say that, because in this, we were originally to make it not only have the conflict, address that issue, which is how that can be a problem for some people. So we're covering almost every issue in the film that applies to this subject. There's literally no sort of area we don't.
So when do you plan on filming? Do you have a date set?
Well, no, the next phase is I'm now about to start contacting big names. We've got you know, the people that I have sent it to, I mean, there's always the option of doing the low budget version in town, and I'm okay with that. I've been thinking about that a lot, and if I have to go that way, I'm not going to be upset, because it's still going to be great. But I'm going to try and get some of these vegan names, some of these big vegan actors, to see if they love the script as much as everyone that's read it has, and see if they want to be a part of it. If they're a part of it, then who knows when their schedule is free, and also with COVID and everything, when it would work out. But if that doesn't happen, if none of the, I've got a list of over 30 massive names, so that I'll be approaching their managers with the script, and if none of them want to go ahead with that, then probably the plan B would be to get it done around April, May, just before the summertime, because a lot of it's outdoors at national parks, that the main character is a national park ranger. So a lot of it's outdoors. So we'd try and do it before the summer, worst case after the summer. And I wasn't sure about that with COVID, but my mom just told me about an invention that they've made, they've come up with in Brisbane, where I went to high school in Australia. And they're shipping them all over to America, these COVID tests, $30 each, and you get your results back within, they're like a self-testing kit, and you get the results within 20 minutes. Because I was sort of in limbo of thinking, oh, is this even viable to do next year and do it properly? Because I would not feel good about it.
The other company that just got a COVID vaccine, they're shipping out over 6 million vaccines by the end of the year.
Great.
So hopefully there won't be a problem by April.
Yeah, I would hate to be responsible of anyone having any outcome, whether it be just temporarily sick or long-term sickness.
Well, I think too, like I talked to another lady who was doing some filming right now, and we were talked about the whole COVID thing. And I said, I think the thing for me personally is, I know they sign a waiver and blah, 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 blah. But you know, when
you gotta live with yourself.
Yes. When you're a producer, you're responsible for everybody to do it. I mean, you gotta keep a safe set as a producer too. That's
absolutely look after the actors, and because this is the long haul game as well. We're looking at, I plan to make films the rest of my life. I'm finally beginning, and this is not a one off. I plan to make, I've got a lot more films in the pipeline that I'm planning on. So if you treat people with respect, and the actors with respect, and look after them, then you know, in the long haul game, we all rise together. It's not sort of no one needs to sacrifice their health or safety for a movie. It's not
for
necessary.
A movie, for something, yeah. And it was funny because the Nevada Film Office put out a thing, and it was something that's very, if you feel uncomfortable on set, you need to say something. And I tell people that all the time. It's like, I've heard them, one guy was telling me he was in a hot tub for a music video, and it was like, he did it for free, but it was like, he was getting the lead, and he was a really good looking young kid. And they were at some hot springs, and I guess it was so hot that he had burns up and down his legs, but he didn't want to tell the director that the hot springs was burning him, because you have a responsibility to take care of yourself too. And you need to tell him, because that's bullshit. How is he supposed to protect you if you don't tell him?
You've got to speak up. Absolutely.
That's not being whiny. That's being real. And that's a whole different thing.
And that's with everything. I mean, even if, say, for example, someone was making you feel uncomfortable on set, someone was saying something that was, rude or it's not okay. It's sort of the harassment of some sort, or even if you feel it's harassment, that you need to speak up and say something, rather than talk about it years later or complain about it in the moment. If you go to the producer and you say, this is an issue, this guy is freaking me out, then we can deal with it. But if we don't know, we can't help. So it's important.
Honestly,
to
when I'm on set, like, I always have a couple of people that I just trust. They're usually the same people that I trust with everything. But I usually have them on set, because sometimes I will oversee, not see something, or just not realize it, because I'm in, you know, I'm directing, I'm in it.
Yeah.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, who I find is the best source is the makeup artist. The makeup artist usually hears everything. because right. they're the one. For some reason, it's always been that way, whether it be a theater show or a film set. The makeup artist is hearing everyone's private sort Complaints. Of stuff. So if you mm-hmm. have a, if the director and producers have a really good relationship to the makeup artist, you should let them know, come over and let me know. If you hear anything where someone's a little uncomfortable about something or is not sure about anything, then come and let me know. You can do it privately, anonymously, but at least let us know so we know how to deal with that. Because that's happened to me many times where I've heard it goes through the makeup artist to the director or to the producer, and it's like that's fantastic, because as you said, you're busy looking at a million different things. You don't have time to be going into people's personal lives and knowing that they're having an issue that day because of something that's going on at home. Right. So if you can exactly. be a bit more sensitive. No. Idea. No.
Yeah. I think that's an important thing. That was an important subject that we brought up, only for the sheer fact, because I totally understand that. And I think too, because I'm older and I've been on set and I did theater when I was 9 years old. So I've been around it a lot. I've been a bartender. So I'm kind of immune to a lot of stuff.
Right.
So it is important to have people to tell you. And if you're a good leader, those people should feel comfortable just telling you. You don't have to agree yeah. with everything they say, but right. if they tell you, you're not going to bite their head off. It doesn't yes. really matter what the outcome is. The fact that they said something, they can feel good about it.
Yeah.
And so I think that to me, that's like super important as far as being a leader, because yeah. when you're on set, that is your job to make sure everybody's safe. And at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what the reel looks like to me. Did everybody have a good time and did they feel comfortable and safe?
Yeah. Yeah. And they'll come back when they know they can trust you. They'll come back again and again for future projects because they know what to expect. They know that they're in good hands, that it's not going to throw them under the bus because they want the shot.
I mean, I have all my actors are constantly message me, and it feels good to get back to them because I want them to know, hey, I appreciate everything that you've done for me. It's not yeah. a one-way street. I don't believe in that one way. And of course, filmmaking really is like any business. It's built on relationships.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, because this is Real Women Celebrating Women in Independent Film. So yeah. what is there a woman in film that you truly admire, and why you admire her in the past, in the present?
There are many. If I could pick a couple, one would be Emma Thompson. I've always been a huge fan of Emma Thompson's. I initially watched her in all the Shakespearean movies, and then she started writing. She wrote Sense and Sensibility, and so but as an actress, she is my favorite actress. As far as directors go, I loved Jane Campion. She was one of the first people that I saw doing independent films, and it was like stepping into a dream watching her work. And then Penny Marshall from things like Awakenings and League of Their Own. She's a fantastic director, and I remember her from Laverne and Shirley way back when, so it was interesting.
Yeah, so funny because I just interviewed Ronnie Lloyd Nanos, and Penny Marshall was his girl.
Oh well, there you go. It's that generation.
And she really was the one of the champion women that kind of broke through the whole yeah. filmmaking. And the thing is that when she got into film and television, she got in through her brother. And because right. he knew how smart she was, and he always, like, I read a memoir of Gary Marshall's, and he basically said that he felt like she was really the talented one. So that was kind of nice. I mean, that yeah. was, I mean, he was obviously hugely talented, but I think the world is just completely changing.
Yeah.
So Danny, what is in your future besides the Animal Protector? Do you have any films that you have coming up that you're in? We know you're an actor.
Yeah. Ring of Desire. You mentioned Ronnie there. And I think the reason Ronnie and I both like Penny Marshall is we're about the same age. So we're both in our 40s. So that makes sense. Then I've got... it really all my focus now. I mean, I had a lot of different things that were scheduled for this year that all got closed down. And then, now my focus is really just doing my own films. I'm I mean, I will act in other people's films if they ask me, but I'm not chasing that. I'm not auditioning and going online and searching for roles. I'm really just focusing on doing my own films, because there's so many films that I've been dying to do for decades that I've come up with. So this is the most important one to me, The Animal Protector, but there are a lot of films I want to make. And one of them would be the musical stage show that I put on, set in the 80s. Put that on in Australia and in Singapore, and I wanted to make that a movie here in America. And that was, again, another reason I came to America, was to get those films made, because you've got the best talent in the world here. And it's funny that not only the Animal Protector is set in national parks, and we have the national parks, but the musical is set in Las Vegas. So I can go back to 80s Las Vegas. So yeah, we'll be shooting around the old casinos that were around in the 80s.
Especially down with the mob again in the 80s.
Yeah, exactly. It's basically about a group of impersonators. So it's Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston. There's all these 80s impersonators, but they're not doing so well, because the big thing at that time was Elvis and Sinatra. And that we had the real Michael and the real Madonna, and actually I changed Madonna to Whitney Houston, we had all the, you know, the real Cyndi Lauper, Arnold Schwarzenegger, where now that's more nostalgic. Back then it was like, well, we want to see the old classic superstar impersonators. So it's all original music and that I wrote, and it's so the performers will be singing new material. So rather than doing the old standard stuff, because whenever I see a Michael Jackson impersonator, I think, oh, that's good. They're doing Billie Jean. That's good. Still not Michael, though. He's the best. You can't be as good or better. So it was important to me that they're doing all original material and it's all new. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like seeing, when you see Michael and Whitney singing a love duet, it's like we've never seen that before.
Right.
So that's not really got a, that does have a message, but it's not as powerful as The Animal Protector as far as a message. That's just more light entertainment where everyone's going to have a great laugh and watch singing and dancing. And it's a feel good one. It's kind of like along the lines of Mamma Mia and Grease and those kind of movies where you come out just feeling happy.
Awesome. So I have one more question. I have one more question for you. How do people get a hold of you?
They can look up DannyTesla.com or my Facebook, Danny Tesla. Like I said before, there's only a few of us. So you'll probably find me there. Or IMDb, I'm on Danny Tesla. And Instagram, I'm under Mr. Danny Tesla on Instagram.
Okay, that's awesome. Well, I really appreciate all the time that you put into it. Looking forward to seeing The Animal Protector. And of course, I love musicals. And I don't know if you've seen The Prom, but it's definitely one to see.
Okay.
You need to watch it. It's very up to date, and Ryan Murphy's amazing.
Okay.
And of course, my daughter got a very small role in it, but we're very excited because she's in a movie with Meryl Streep. And
God. Oh, I have to.
So
I didn't
it's
know,
on,
she, I didn't know
yeah,
she filmed
that's on
it.
On Netflix right now. It's the biggest thing they've done.
Oh, wow, because so, I remember they'd postponed it, but I didn't know they shot it. So that's great.
Yeah. So we actually released a couple days ago. So I went over there last.
Likewise, and congrats on Tommyknockers. I saw that you're doing that coming up. So
yes,
congrats.
I'm really happy to be doing that. The fact that it's a Western is exciting. I actually do have a Western horror of my own, but I just read their script and mine's totally different, which I'm really happy about.
Right.
Because, you know, mine's a little more Omen-ish.
Okay.
How's that?
Nice.
I haven't written it, but it's completely outlined, but I'm still working on my mom squad. So that's been kind of fun. And I'm thinking about it was going to be a micro series, but now I'm thinking about turning it into a film. Okay, Danny Tesla, this is amazing. I can't wait to see The Animal Protector. Yes, I want you to send me a cast notice. I'd like to audition.
Okay.
Cheers to you. I'm very excited. I can't wait to see what you do.
Thanks, Brenda.